I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. The Senate has been a big focus since the election, with the Nick Xenophon team, One Nation and other crossbenchers pivotal players, wheeling and dealing with the government to determine the fate of bills. Nick Xenophon has himself been a long-term Senate operator, who's sometimes been dealt to the margins by the numbers. But now he's absolutely centre stage. With the parliamentary year over, but the political year still bringing some surprises, Senator Xenophon joins us today as he rushes between meetings and media engagements. Nick Xenophon, your Senate team has now a lot of power over what the government can and can't do. What are the biggest couple of achievements since the election?
It's not just the Senate team. It's not just Stirling Griffin, Sky Kokoschke-Moore. It's also my colleague Rebecca Sharkey in the lower house, where we bounce ideas off each other, and where she does with a tightly numbered lower house. Her vote is also important. Two biggest single achievements in the last few weeks have been the issue of whistleblower protections. The government has agreed to sweeping changes to whistleblower protection laws in this country. Compensation for whistleblowers will be built into the registered organisations legislation that will apply to unions and employer organisations, but most importantly, it will also apply to corporations and to the public sector in the next 18 months, and we've already begun the process on that. The other big achievement just a few days ago was with the ABCC legislation. The government has agreed to procurement law changes, which will mean for the first time we're more in line with some of our major trading partners such as the US and Canada and Europe, whereby we need to take into account the economic benefits of procurement decisions and also making sure we have Australian standards. And dovetailing onto that, because it's all related to productivity on building sites, security of payments legislation, a process has begun, a thorough process has begun, which will make a real difference to tens of thousands of subcontractors around the country.
Just on this procurement, that is moving towards protectionism.
Absolutely not. I dispute that. No. It is not protectionism to ensure that when you consider value for money, you ensure that Australian standards are being complied with and that you look at the economy-wide benefits of decisions. Now, Rossi Boots, and I've got a few pairs of Rossi Boots made in South Australia. They've been making boots for our troops and everybody else since 1910. They missed out on a multi-million dollar defence contract about 3 years ago to an overseas company with a price differential of only 10 to 15%. Now, if you do the maths, if you look at the quality of the boot, but leaving that aside, if you look at the tax receipts that would be obtained here in Australia, company tax, a PAYE tax on the employees and extra overtime, and the economy-wide effects of having that millions of dollars spent on Rossi boots, into the local economy, the butcher, the local deli, or the local supermarket, it makes sense to have procurement laws that take that into account.
It sounds a log bow, the local deli and the Rossi boots.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, it's not. It's a very short bow. It's a crossbow, actually, for the simple reason. The simple reason is that if the Commonwealth Government spends $60 billion a year on procurement and procuring goods and services, billions of dollars of that go overseas. If that money was spent in Australia, it would have economy-wide benefits.
Now, on the ABCC legislation, you said you wouldn't be talking about this or you wouldn't be voting on this until you got a deal on water. And yet, in the end, you got water put on the COAG agenda more or less permanently. You got some extra Senate hearings. Was that really much of a deal?
Well, you omitted the third element in it, and that is a written commitment by the Prime Minister that it would be the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, which was agreed to in 2013, the intergovernmental agreement, would be delivered in full and on time. And I'm quoting pretty much verbatim what the Prime Minister wrote to Premier Wetherill, and I was copied in on that. Just a week or two before that time, the Deputy Prime Minister had written to the South Australian Water Minister, Ian Hunter, saying that, look, we can't do it, but The commitment has now been made. It's on the COAG agenda. Senate estimates is an important accountability process, special estimates hearings for the Murray-Darling Basin plan. And Michelle, you should know by now that I can be a very pesky, persistent bastard. And the fact that it's on the agenda, we've got those accountability mechanisms, means that this issue will not go away. And my job and that of my colleagues is to make sure the plan is implemented in full. It's not just about South Australia, it's about the national interest.
So when do you think, though, that extra environmental water will get to South Australia?
Well, we've got 8 years. I mean, at the moment, there's plenty of water in the system, which is terrific, but we need to have those water efficiency measures in place, including measures relating to constraints. And after all, $1.78 billion has been set aside for this extra 450 gigalitres of water, but there's still a way to go for the 2,750 gigalitres target, which is that primary target with the 450 gigalitres bolted on as an extra insurance policy for the river.
Now, your style is to try and act in conjunction with other crossbench players on particular issues. Now, I've noticed you've started to do this with Darren Hinch. What about One Nation? How are you finding any attempt to get commonality there?
Look, it's a courteous relationship, even though I made it clear that I don't agree with them on their views on immigration, on race, on religion. Attacking Islam is not what we do. We think we are a multicultural society, and tolerance is the key. And obviously we have very different views on climate change, but where there's common ground, such as issues on procurement, on Australian jobs, on food labelling, on farmers getting a fair go, obviously, where there's common ground, we'll work together. I'm not going to be petty about it, and I don't believe One Nation will be either.
Today we saw some really bad economic figures. Growth has gone negative for the September quarter. And Scott Morrison said that what this showed was that the Parliament people in the Parliament must partner with the government to get through its economic plan. Now, you've been critical of some aspects of the proposed company tax cuts. Would these sort of figures change your mind at all?
These sort of figures mean that we need to deal with a great degree of alacrity, with a great degree of urgency, issues such as a proper industry transition plan for all the jobs that will be lost in the auto sector, upwards of 200,000 jobs at risk by the end of next year, particularly in Victoria and South Australia, with economy-wide ripple effects. Money is sitting there in the government coffers for the automotive transformation scheme that won't be used. That money needs to be used in part for an industry plan that works. We also need to boost population growth in those low population growth states and regions. I'm not talking about Sydney and Melbourne, which are bursting at the seams. I'm talking about South Australia, Tasmania, regional Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland and WA particularly. That involves targeted migration growth, business migrants, where we actually have shortages. That will boost economic growth. And also, I'd like to see Australia, and in particular my home state of South Australia, a international student hub where international students come here. They learn, they spend money, but also they build close links with Australia that lasts for the rest of their lives.
So are we talking a bit of horse trading here to get these tax cuts through?
You know, horse trading is such an unseemly term, Michelle.
But it's pretty descriptive, isn't it?
It's descriptive, but as I said in my first speech, as you will remember, for the problem with horse trading is that sometimes you end up with a donkey, or worse still, you can make an ass of yourself. I think if the government is interested in economic growth, as I'm sure it is, to ensure we don't have that second quarter of negative growth, which is it's very important that we avoid that, then I would have thought these sorts of issues stimulating growth in manufacturing, in advanced manufacturing, in migration, in international student numbers, these are all unambiguously good things for economic growth.
So where are you up to on the tax cuts? How much will you support? It's a decade-long program. It involves small business first, then big business at the end.
I said as a team we will support up to $10 million, but we've got a lot more talking to do with the government before we support anything more than that.
But you're not completely closing the door to that?
I'm saying that there are other things that we think ought to be a greater priority, and we'd like to sit down with the government constructively. I mean, the government knows, as I did with the former Rudd and Gillard governments, we act in good faith. We negotiate. We'll have hard negotiations with the government, but we'd like to think that if we reach a consensus, a compromise, we do so in good faith, which I think is mutually beneficial to both parties. So we did that with the concessions we got on procurement, on whistleblower protections. So I think the government can expect more of the same, and I think the government is prepared to sit down and talk to us about areas of common ground.
Just on another issue of the moment, we saw the government appear to open the way for a possible emissions intensity scheme and then move back from that very quickly. What is your opinion of going down that route? Were you disappointed to see the retreat?
Well, absolutely. Given the history of this, you may remember
you
back in 2009. Back in 2009, when Malcolm Turnbull was opposition leader, we jointly commissioned, that is, Malcolm and I jointly commissioned Frontier Economics and Danny Price, the managing director of that economics consultancy, to come up with an alternative emissions trading scheme. Back then, and this is interesting in an era of post-truth politics, in 2009, the Liberals embraced it. Labor rejected it, calling it a mongrel of a scheme. In 2016, Labor embraced it, saying this was the way to go. The Liberals have rejected it. So it seems that in 6 years, as far as Labor's concerned, the mongrel has become a top dog. And we now have
a pedigree.
It's got a pedigree, all right. This is very bad. This is very bad policy making, and it's lousy partisan politics. By the government. Look, the fact that Cory Bernardi, and you know, Michelle, I said this publicly, I almost missed Cory Bernardi while he was away, but I take it back. As fond as I am of him at a personal level and his decency at a personal level, he's an absolute shocker on this. He needs to look at the figures, look at the economic modelling. This will actually reduce power prices, it'll increase reliability and energy security. And what's more, it will help us achieve our Paris targets much more easily with much less pain to consumers and industry.
Well, you no longer have Malcolm as a dancing partner.
You know what? I think he's sitting at the edge of the dance floor just itching to dance. And, you know, I think it needs to be a Zorba dance. We need to smash some plates because that's the only way we can get some reform through.
I think on that note, we'll say Happy Christmas, Nick Xenophon.
And I can say Opa, as the Greeks say.
Look forward to seeing what you have to do and produce next year. And that's all from our conversation podcast for today. Thanks to my producer, Pat Hutchins. I'm Michelle Grattan. Back with you soon.